Mace Vingan and Donick, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. I hope everybody is having a wonderful start to their Thursday. On my way here, I drove behind a white Bronco with the license plate, not OJ. I appreciate the clarification.
Why would the state even let somebody get a tag like that? Not OJ.
I was wondering if
OJ Simpson. Like we wouldn't know that.
I didn't really think you were.
Exactly. Like, okay.
Maybe if it was 1995.
Yeah, maybe
you
if
might
you were
want to
in
clarify.
LA.
Or OJ, yeah, exactly.
OJ Simpson has passed.
Exactly.
So I knew it wasn't OJ, but the driver of the vehicle, who might be listening right now, I saw you. I see.
We're glad. We're glad they're listening.
Yeah, yes,
we
are.
They're listening. You may want to change your license plate.
And that person wins because when you have a license plate like that, you're trying to get people to comment and react.
Yeah,
right?
Pretty much. So
I was wondering if I
you're trying to get a reaction out.
And he succeeded.
Yeah. I was at a stoplight. I was like, do I take a picture of this? But wouldn't that be an invasion of privacy? So I'm just going to announce it to our listening audience instead that there is a white Bronco out there with a Tennessee license plate that says not OJ, just in
case.
It's
not even
wondering.
A California license plate.
No, it was a Tennessee license plate.
Hopefully that person, let me not say hopefully, but if they're from LA, okay. I can give you like, but if you're not even from the LA area or California, why? 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 Oh, why?
Maybe a big fan of the FX miniseries that was done several years ago.
Cuba Gooding Jr.
I may be a little loopy right now because I told Adam my neck was killing me yesterday, like last night. It was an exercise that I did in one of the classes, and I just messed up my neck, and oh, it was in pain. So I had to take a muscle relaxer, and I was in the bed so early. Bailey came downstairs, was like, oh. Bed's in the bed. My neck is killing me. So I slept well.
Okay.
I went to sleep. All the lights were on in my bedroom, and the heat pack was on my neck. And I woke up at like 6 o'clock in the morning, and the TV was on pause. So I'm like, okay, all right, so be it. But that was my night.
You could say you were not disgruntled.
I was not disgruntled. I was gruntled.
You woke up gruntled?
Yeah, I woke up gruntled because my neck felt better, but I felt a little loopy too.
Literally. I, on the other hand, a little more disgruntled.
Yeah, you should be.
After the Brewers came back and
what's wrong with your Mets, man?
You know, the Brewers, the Brewers exposed the flaw.
How much time
in the
do
Mets.
You have?
Yeah. All things considered, when the Mets were 0-5 to start the year and got swept by the Brewers in their home opening series, and then were 11 games under 500 at the end of May, pre-Grimace, right? And had blown, I think, 5 leads when they led after 8 innings in the month of May. That was a I did not think they would get to this game. So
that's
I
like
tried to keep
a fourth
that.
Quarter lead.
I tried to breathe and think about that as the game slipped away last night. You got to give the Brewers credit. This kid, Jackson Churio. By the way, on the Brewers, there are, I haven't counted up, but I'm going to guess double-digit Nashville Sounds on the roster, former Nashville Sounds, guys who have come up through here and played in front of the fans here in our city. In fact, both starting pitchers for former Sounds going head-to-head, Sean Manaea and Frankie Montas. So it is an interesting tie to the city there. But
so the Sounds is the Brewers.
Yes.
Farm league. Okay, I'm going to ask you this before you get back to the Brewers because I never understood it. Why isn't it that, you know, the Brewers don't have a team in Milwaukee, like a minor league team in Milwaukee? Do they?
They don't.
Like,
they,
is that typical of teams to have their minor
it's an
league
interesting
outside
setup.
The city?
It's an interesting partnership with the two cities because Nashville's affiliate is in Milwaukee, right? The Admirals. So it's flip-flop for baseball. So there is a connection. But, you know, I guess – Over time, they figured that there just wouldn't be enough fans that would go to both teams' games. It does happen. We mentioned San Jose in hockey does have their minor league team in the same city as their major league team.
Toronto as well.
Yeah, it does. So there are some cases where that happens. But most of the time, you try to make a partnership, and it does rotate every so many years. But you try to get a partnership of a city that's not too far away if you need to call somebody up and get them to the park in a hurry.
Okay.
Geographically, you want it to be fairly close to where you're located.
There was a point in time when the American Hockey League team in my hometown, the Norfolk Admirals, they were affiliated with the Tampa Bay Lightning for a while. Well, they started being as the affiliate for the Blackhawks. Then they went to the Lightning, and by the end, they were for a couple seasons the AHL affiliate of the Anaheim Ducks.
So if you get a guy sick at morning skate, it's not easy to get a guy from Norfolk into the game.
And then they eventually moved that franchise to San Diego.
Okay, that's
the
sounds
Ducks
better.
Affiliate is now in San Diego, much more geographically
sensible.
Yes, sensible. But as Willie mentioned, the Mets fall last night. Game three, winner take all. Mets Brewers tonight at 6:00. To all of our Braves fans out there, I'm sorry for your loss. They were eliminated by the San Diego Padres. I mean, I'm not a huge baseball. I'm not a huge baseball fan, so I don't take pleasure in in the Braves losing, like Willie might, for example.
I direct all
of your ire toward Willie.
Yes, you can. But you guys have won. You Braves fans have certainly had more laughs at our expense than the other way around over the last 25, 27 years. I go back to 1998 is when really the Braves have owned the Mets for the most part. The Mets, I think, can take satisfaction in the fact that they took a chunk out of the Braves before they had to board that flight to San Diego. That was a really tough matchup. But I have to tip my hat to the Braves because they could have folded up the tent. They had devastating injuries to some of their arguably their best, or at least their most talented pitcher, their most talented player. Nobody gets to the playoffs when you lose two guys like that. And that just scratches the surface on some of the guys they miss for big chunks of the season. Austin Riley and the center fielder, Harris. Harris? Is that right?
Michael Harris.
Yeah. I mean, he missed a lot of the season. Ozzie Albies missed a ton of the season. They did a tremendous job. Brian Snitker deserves a lot of credit, maybe even manager of the year kind of consideration for getting them there. But they just had nothing left. The Padres, I think, are going to give the Dodgers all they can handle. That's going to be a great thing to watch. The crowds are going to be awesome in both of those stadiums. The superstar power of both teams, that is must watch. That is going to be must watch. But first things first, Mets Brewers tonight. Breathe in, breathe out.
Winner takes on the Phillies.
Breathe in, breathe out.
In the divisional round. Winner of Mets and Brewers.
I need one of those muscle relaxers. You got another one of those? I might need that tonight.
I'm not sure doing the show on a muscle relaxer is a good
idea.
It'll
keep you calm.
And a salute to the Royals for eliminating the Orioles. A lot of heartbreak in Baltimore, another city you spent a lot of time with. That team is built over the years, and they're really good, and they haven't had any postseason success. But the Royals shut them down twice at Camden Yards. And then D-Mace's childhood team, the Tigers, pulled off a huge two-game sweep in Houston. That was a dramatic game yesterday. I mean, the Astros have been in the LCS or the World Series, but they have made at least the LCS for 7 straight years. That's incredible.
New sheriff in town.
But they're gone.
New sheriff.
Young Tigers took him down with a bunch of guys that I'm sure a lot of people are going, I've never heard of this guy.
I saw this tweet from SpotTrack the other day. The Detroit Tigers 26-man wild card roster combines for $18.8 million of 2024 salary.
$18.8 million. 62
MLB players earned more than that this season on their own.
Yeah, hey, listen, single player.
It's just
including Josh Hader, the guy that gave up the line shot, big hit of the game yesterday, bases loaded, double with two out. The entire lineup for the
made less money
than Josh Hader.
Yes.
Hey, that's just a city for you. You give us $5, we'll build you a mansion. That's what we do, man.
I believe the hashtag is Gritty Tiggs. Hashtag Gritty Tiggs.
I guess the Tigers.
Yes.
But that don't sound too right. That
Gritty Tigers?
That don't sound like Detroit, man. Gritty Tigs. No, nobody. No, nobody in the city say no damn Gritty Tigs. No.
They are now.
Hell no.
According to social media, that
no,
is.
No, man. Y'all need to find a harder name or something. This is Detroit, man. D-Town. Motor City.
So the Tigers advance to the divisional round.
Home of Kronk Boxing.
They'll take on the Cleveland Guardians. Starting Saturday. So the matchups we know in the divisional rounds in the American League, Tigers at Guardians, Royals at Yankees.
Now that's a nostalgic memory for anybody who has. It goes back to my age because in the late 70s, from 1976 through 1980, they played 4 out of 5 years in the LCS, Yankees against Royals. So it has been a long time. Mm-hmm. But that's going to conjure. You're going to see tons of footage of Reggie Jackson, George Brett, Greg Nettles,
Bo Jackson,
Paul Splitarver. It was a little bit before Bo Jackson. He came along a little bit later. But that was a great intense run. You're going to see a fight between Hal McRae and Willie Randolph. You're going to see a fight between Greg Nettles and George Brett. The over-under, I mean, you don't even bet because you're going to see it. It's easy. The odds in Vegas, it's 100% you're going to see this footage.
So Tigers at Guardians, Royals at Yankees. In the National League, Padres at Dodgers, and either the Mets or the Brewers at the Phillies. How would you feel about that matchup, Willie? Mets at Phillies if the Mets were to advance tonight?
I would love to see it just because they're there, and they would truly be playing with house money. The Phillies, to me, have the best roster up and down. They've been knocking on the door the last 2 years. They made the World Series 2 years ago. Blew it, really. Had a 3-1 lead, I think, against the Diamondbacks?
I believe it was 3-1.
I mean, they were cruising along. They have a great atmosphere, but that's a huge rivalry, too. And I think you'd have nothing to lose at that point if you're the Mets. But
I'll say this.
I'd love to see it.
I know you're the Mets fan here, but I'm just a spectator looking from the outside looking in. Aaron Nola and Zach Wheeler have kind of been, I'm not saying falling off the top of their pedestal, but this season they've kind of shown a little bit of regression. And I think it's kind of in the Mets' favor if they do make it to that point in the playoffs.
Zach Wheeler is a former Met, so that's mm-hmm. big. That the theater, the rivalry, that would be good for baseball if those two teams played, just like Padres-Dodgers. There's a lot of stories there. And the Mets did beat the Phillies 3 out of 4 down the stretch in a huge series to get them to where they are here. So, hey, baseball, man. I can talk about it all day, but we don't do it on this show. But everybody call me, text me. You know, I'm ready. I'm here until 6, and then I need the muscle relaxer. I need to go to deep meditation to watch and try to stay sane.
We encourage baseball in Forrest Company Saturdays 9 to 11.
There you go.
Call it.
There you go. Just call me. Call me Saturday. Call me Saturday. We'll talk. If the Mets win. If they don't, then don't talk
especially
to me.
If he's still on some sort of muscle relaxer.
No coffee for either of them, please.
B-Man on our text line says, good luck, Willie, coming from a Braves fan. So B-Man
really?
Crossing the aisle.
I don't believe
B-Man
that.
Crossing the aisle
I don't believe that.
Luck.
No, I don't believe that. I don't believe that. There's some shade thrown behind there.
You think there's good some luck, sarcasm?
Good luck, Willie. As he's
not.
Exactly. I don't see any sarcasm. No sarcasm font detected. Okay. But I am, personally, I am one of those petty sports fans. It often happens. I think about it most in college sports. You know, my favorite sporting event, of course, is the men's basketball tournament, March Madness. Mm-hmm. And people will say, are you going to root for the other teams in the ACC? Are you going to pull for Virginia or NC State? No, absolutely not. I want them to lose. I don't have any of this sort of conference
I don't love. Understand.
I don't get that. So,
me either.
B-Man, it's a nice sentiment from a Braves fan wishing a Mets fan good luck. We'll see. Wes and Hermitage says, Houston Astros equal cheaters. I hope they never, ever, ever win another game, much less another World Series. I hate that franchise about as much as I hate the Cardinals. So what kind of fan would that make, Wes?
I do think there is a huge group. Unless you're an Astros fan, mm-hmm. I think everybody was rooting for the Tigers to slay the Dragon. I think people are just tired of the Astros. And you got to say, even after the cheating, they have been in your face. The bad guys. Like, you still can't touch us.
Exactly. You know?
But I think there's this feeling, though, that they got away with it.
But right? AJ Hinch getting revenge on the
AJ
Astros.
Hinch, the manager for that team that had he paid the penalty.
Yes.
So he gets to manage the Tigers and takes it. So that was fitting. That was a good storyline there.
One of my favorite TikToks. I'm not big on TikTok, but I remember this one when that I don't know if TikTok was around at that time. Maybe it was Instagram. It doesn't matter. It was when the Astros sign stealing scandal or whatever it was in the news, and someone did a trash can video to In the Air Tonight.
Oh, that was classic. That was great. That was awesome.
That was very, very good.
It was well done. I would very much recommend, if you haven't seen that, to Google that. It'll pop up.
By the way, Gene in Spring Hill says, "Good luck, Willie," coming from a Yankees fan.
Oh,
LOL. Now that person is not. That's not sincere.
That's
sarcasm.
That
is not sincere.
You
There's
can't
no way.
Be a Yankee fan and tell a Met fan good luck. Seriously,
that just doesn't happen.
Yeah, that.
That's the same person that would just tear up a subway ticket.
Exactly. It's like unless you became a Met fan like yesterday, then maybe. But a Yankee fan like yesterday, maybe. But if you're a diehard Yankee fan, no way in hell you going to root for the Mets.
That just doesn't happen.
No.
No.
Gosh.
Absolutely not. But you know what? Their heart seems to be in the right place. There's no sarcasm font detected. So we will see what happens for Willie's Mets today. They take on the Brewers at 6 o'clock. Derek's Tigers start their series against the Guardians on Saturday afternoon. 615-737-1025. Of course, we'll talk some Titans today. We have some things we didn't get to yesterday because we had such a riveting conversation with a lot of participation about the story of the week or the next 2 weeks because the Titans don't play on Sunday. Will Levis and Mason Rudolph, but there are a couple of other Titans players that we are going to discuss today. In addition, Hal Gill will join us at 1 o'clock to discuss some Predators, and we'll get into some Predators conversation in the final hour. And most importantly, at noon, silly underdog picks. So if you want to represent the people, be listening around noon. I made sure to look at the prize so that I pronounce it correctly this week.
Okay.
There will be no treaching this week as there was last week. I made sure to run it by Willie. I said, am I pronouncing this correctly? He said yes. So we'll unveil that prize. It's a good prize. And our people's representative last week did, in fact, win the tickets to the concert featuring Tretch, among others, picking Alabama to beat Georgia. So that could be you. So we can listen. So be sure to listen starting at 12 o'clock. Cody in Portland says, "Let's go, Brew Crew." Would you rather hear that or a Yankees fan wishing you good luck?
I think the Brewer fans, they've had thin years, thin times. They're great fans. I know some, including Bob Cole, the director of broadcasting for the Predators. So we always have a friendly nod to each other. It's a respectful rivalry. I got nothing but love for the Brew Crew. So I'm okay with that.
Okay.
I'm okay with that guy.
Check back with Willie.
The Yankee fan, I just don't think is being sincere.
Yeah, it was sincere.
And why should he be? I wouldn't be doing that to a Yankee fan.
Absolutely. I wouldn't even send a text.
I would send a text that says, "I hope you lose,
exactly.
Jerk."
Absolutely.
This town ain't big enough for the both of us. 615-737-1025. So there was a discussion that I wanted to have yesterday, but we're going to carry it over today about a particular Titans player and where that player's mind might be after what's been going on at the quarterback position. We'll start discussing that next. 615-737-1025. Tune into 94.9 The Fan this Saturday for Vanderbilt football. The Commodores will take on Alabama, number one Alabama, with pregame beginning at 1:30 and kickoff at 3:15. Coverage is also available on 94.9 The Fan app and at thegamenashville.com. Dougie Fresh, Big Daddy Kane,
what?
Slick Rick, Treach of Naughty by Nature, and Spinderella at Ascend Amphitheater on Friday, October 4th.
Hold on. I'm going to correct you, Adam.
I'm sorry.
It's not Treach, it's Tretch.
Tretch.
You said Treach.
I said Treach. It looks like Treach.
No, I'm not saying. What, I know. Listen, Adam, I know, but I'm just saying, like, time. I want to correct you.
Stretch. Listen. I am down. I am down with
OPS. Not Screech like from yeah, who's
whatever.
Saved by the Bell.
Stretch.
Yeah. I'm not Screech.
Be careful when you say
it. I am down with OPS. I promise that won't happen
again.
Oh,
boy. That was funny. That was one of the funniest.
That was last week on Silly Underdog Picks, me mispronouncing Tretch from Naughty by Nature, who was part of the show that we were giving tickets away to. We have another prize for Silly Underdog Picks coming up at noon. It's not that. I've already practiced how to say it. I've cleared it with Willie and Derek, so I'm not going to mispronounce this prize. But stay tuned for that Silly Underdog Picks.
Different genre of music, I would say.
Much different genre of music.
It's going to be a great show.
It should be a great show. So I was planning on talking about one veteran Titans player, but CJ on our phone line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com wants to discuss another veteran Titans player who we are also planning on discussing. So we're going to switch it up. CJ, please go ahead.
Hey, always a fan. I've got actually a few low-level connections up there in Minnesota in their facility. And the question is, Jeffrey Simmons, now, would the Titans, do you think, be interested? Of course, they could potentially be in a rebuilding situation. Minnesota, they're talking potential Super Bowl run with this team that they've put together. Is that something, do you think, you know, me with my low-level connections, you with your high-level connections, could we facilitate this? Do you think the Titans – would be interested in potentially a first-round pick for Minnesota, maybe a later pick?
A first-round pick, and what else would you throw in there?
Well, I think they're only going to want draft picks, right? So now Minnesota, if you look at their situation, they're getting a third from Cousins, but they only have a first-round pick and 2 fifths going into next year's draft. They only have 3 picks. So them trading that first-round pick is kind of gold for them at this point, but then are they a legitimate Super Bowl contender? And then you would be probably looking at some multiple picks in 2 years later, 2026. You're probably looking at, you know, maybe a third, maybe a third and a fourth. I mean,
CJ, answer me this, because I haven't watched a ton. I know Sam Darnold's playing well, and Justin Jefferson obviously is doing his thing. How did they go from being sort of a team nobody was mentioning, even for playoff? Playoff contention, really, when you look at the division. I think there was probably more people talking about the Bears getting to the playoffs than the Vikings. How did they go from that to what you just mentioned, Super Bowl run in four weeks?
Basically, we've seen teams come out of the woodwork like that in the NFL history, right? We've seen teams come out just like, where did this team come up? And basically, their success was they have what they think is – two of the top young coaches on both sides of the ball, of course, KOC on the offensive side and Brian Flores on the defensive side. But basically what they went out and did on the offseason defensively is they kind of gave Flores a wish list to go out and sign his guys on defense. So they had 4 or 5 under-the-radar signings that had a history with Brian Flores, and it just kind of has all come together. And then you've got the Sam Darnold resurgence where they – thought he was going to be a player, and now we're seeing a resurgence there when a quarterback gets in the right system. And I feel like from an offensive side of it, KOC, Kevin O'Connell, can basically – I think he's a young McVay now. He's just a guy that gets these guys open. You watch them on tape, and these – you know, Jefferson runs free. And how does a guy with that much swag run free? It's kind of mind-boggling. But it just has all come together, and we've seen that through the history of the game. Some of it you can put your finger on, some of it you can't. But they really – I mean, they're blowing out teams last year. I mean, look at their – they played against San Francisco. They played Houston. Last week they go into Green Bay, and they're up 28-0 in the first quarter. So – it just has all come together.
And
so
now you want Jeffrey Simmons. Now you want Big Jeff.
That's a dominant piece, right? Are the Titans, if you call the Titans and you offer them a first and 2/3, they've got to sit around and say, hey, where are we doing? We're building this new stadium. We want to look at 2 years from now.
All right, you've set the table
for us.
Thank you,
CJ. Thank
you
for
set the table for this discussion. Thank you.
Listen, trading away, you know, Jeffrey Simmons, regardless of what you – may think about him right now.
And that's what I want to get into.
His level of play. Jeffrey Simmons is still one of the – he's still a top five, top seven defensive tackle in this league.
But how would you –
and you're not going to get better.
How would you grade that? Because this is the conversation we're going to have in the conversation that we have had over the course of the first few weeks of the season. Jeffrey Simmons' numbers, solely based on numbers, and that's only a part of the equation, but solely based on numbers is not a top five, top seven, top defensive tackle this season. I went back and looked. I was curious to see how he performed through the first three games of last season versus the first three games of this season. Because, of course, he did not play on Monday with what he said was a Tommy John ligament injury in his left elbow. I can't recall a football player dealing with an injury that's most associated with pitchers, of course. But Jeffrey Simmons threw three games last season. 12 tackles, 2 sacks, 11 quarterback pressures. Simmons threw three games this season. 3 games, 12 tackles, 1 sack, so the same number of tackles, 1 less sack, 1 quarterback pressure. Through 3 games last season, Simmons had 11 pressures. Through 3 games this season, he has 1.
I think Simmons, he may be, whereas at the beginning of the season when Denard Wilson got hired, I came on here and I said, the guy that should benefit the most from this is, and now this is before they got Ernest Jones and Murray Jr. I thought the guy that would benefit the most out of this is Jeffrey Simmons, because Denard Wilson is in attack mode all the time. And that seems to fit right up Jeffrey Simmons' alley. Attack, attack, attack. Take on double team, split them, attack. But it seems like everyone else seems to be benefiting from this new style of defense, especially the edge guys and the linebackers. And Jeffrey is sort of still trying to find his way through this defense. So you hope that he does catch on. You hope that as the season goes, he gets more comfortable in what he's doing. But right now, I don't think he's – I think he may be struggling a little bit. And I'm not going to – you know, I don't know when that injury happened with him. Did it happen last game? Maybe in the game prior to Miami. Did it happen the last game or not? He didn't make mention of it. It wasn't until the week that we started hearing about this elbow injury. But he is the guy that hasn't benefited, whereas I thought he was going to be the guy that benefited the most from this attack style, because I look at what Baltimore was able to do with their D-line, and they were always in attack mode, always in attack mode. And they had a Pro Bowler on that side of the ball in regards to their defensive linemen. So I just thought he would benefit from it, but he hasn't up until this point. Is he still a good player? Yes, Jeffrey's still a good player. But he's not the dominant player that we saw 2 years ago. And it seems like since then, his play has declined. Now, he had injuries last year. I give him that. He had a lot of injuries.
A year before, really.
Yeah, a year before, he did have some injuries. I think it was the ankle or something like that. But it's almost like he's diminishing. Because now he's piling up these injuries that is not making him as effective as he was before. And teams now are paying attention to him, whereas 2 years ago, yeah, they thought he was a good player, but he didn't do anything to go from a good player to an elite player. But then he started playing that elite style of football. Now everybody's paying attention to him, but just like they pay attention to Jones, just like they pay attention to Lawrence, just like they pay attention to Buckner, these guys that are interior guys that continue to play high-level football, Jeffrey has to find a way to continue to play high-level football when you are the focal point of teams' offenses to stop you.
Here are the questions that I have, okay? I'm going to take this approach, and I'm not just going to sit here like often happens when a guy is struggling like this and just pile on and slam him. He's not as good as everybody says he is. All of this stuff. And I'm just going to try to, let's assess what is happening here. You just mentioned two things that I wonder, and I just, we always assume in the medical world today that when you have injuries, you're going to be back to yourself as long as you're not 38, 39 years old, you're going to be able to be back reasonably. But I'm wondering how the injuries from 2 years ago and last year, is that taking a bite out of his overall talent? I don't know the answer to this. I'm throwing it out there as a theory. I was at the game where the Titans, probably their fortune started to turn away from a contender when against the Colts, who that's their next game, the home game against the Colts. I was at probably the end of the Matt Ryan era, right? The Titans made Matt Ryan look like an old, over-the-hill quarterback.
What a wonderful era that was, Matt Ryan era of the Indianapolis Colts.
And the Matt Ryan experiment, they exposed him, they beat him, but late in the game, Jeffrey Simmons hurt his ankle, and Ryan Tannehill hurt his ankle. And from then on, neither player was the same, and the season ended up unraveling, as we all know. So that's my first question is, have the injuries crept up to take a bite out of him? Two, are they using him different in this scheme? And because I've seen them line him up different places, try to get him matched up with a better person that he can dominate. Because you're right, Adam, you can't ignore the fact that he has not, whether your eye test is I'm just not seeing him show up and make big plays, or what does Barry Trotz use? Illuminate it with the stats. Both match up. He's not making the impact in the first three games that he customarily does.
Same number of tackles through three games last season versus this season. One less sack this season than last season. He had two in his first three games last season, one so far this year. One quarterback pressure this year, 11 through three games last year. So I'm wondering if that is scheme related somewhat to your point.
Well, I look at it and, you know, because I had to go back and look at the Baltimore Ravens of last year and the defensive production out of those guys. And what I noticed was those two edge guys, Van Noy and Clowney, both of those guys, 9.5 sacks, 9 sacks. But here's the big thing and why it may be that they're asking Jeff to do something different and he hasn't got quite comfortable with it. Nnamdi Madubuike, he had 13 sacks last year from the defensive tackle position. Now, this is a defense he had been in for a couple years anyway, you know, with McDonald and then, you know, prior to that. So he had been in this defense, so he had figured this defense out and they knew how to use him. This is where this, to me, shows that, okay, you can get the production from that defensive tackle position, but it is sort of a different – they may be asking you to do something a tad bit different, and you may not be comfortable with it just yet, but when you do get comfortable with it, then you start to play like the guy we saw you play, you know, saw play 2 years ago and even points of last year. Now, the big thing is going to be the injury. Is this going to be a lingering injury with him as far as the elbow? But if it's not, then I do expect the production to go up as the season goes because now he's more comfortable in his offense, I mean his defense. And then those two guys on the edge should take some relief off of him too. Because once Harold Landry gets going, Harold Landry has, what, 2 sacks, 3 sacks now? So once he starts to really rev it up, it may take some pressure off of Simmons, especially if Sweat continues to play the way that he's been playing. It'll take a little bit of the stress off of Simmons, and then Simmons can kind of get back to the player that he once was. Because right now, he's not that player for whatever reason. He hasn't been that player, and I know, you know.
But we're
I'm
talking about three games, right?
So, yeah, that's
so
what I'm
let's
saying.
Let's not panic. I think that it needs
but
to
he
be.
Does.
Let's analyze why internally and figure out how do we use him and get the most out of him. Because I don't think he just overnight became a pumpkin.
No. I'm not saying that. But he's going to even as you're filling your way through the defense or filling your way through a new offense, you still should be able to show flashes of yourself. More than what Jeff has shown. That's why I think people are so upset because he's not showing the flashes of what he was last year at one point and even 2 years ago.
So do you think it's the scheme more than injuries compiling? Which way would you lean?
It could be a bit of both. You know, I think it could be the injury, but I don't know how injured he was coming into. He may have been 100% and not even worried about the ankle injury and stuff like that. So I would put it more so on him still trying to figure out his space. Even though he is the alpha dog sort of in this equation, he still must find his space in what they're trying to do from a defensive standpoint. Is he comfortable? That's what people should be asking. Are you comfortable in the scheme that they're running? Because your production has dipped some. So what is it? That's a question that they need to ask Simmons, and they need to ask Denard Wilson. Does he feel comfortable? Has he relayed to you? Is he comfortable in the defense that you're running?
615-737-1025. We'll continue to take your thoughts on Jeffrey Simmons on our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Coming up next, to continue the Jeffrey Simmons conversation, I heard Paul Kaharsky say something yesterday when he was on with Robbie and Joe as it relates to Jeffrey Simmons, and I want to get Willie and Derek's thoughts on it. We'll do that next. Tune into 102.5, 106.3 The Game this Saturday at 11 a.m. for our college football game of the week, Missouri versus Texas A&M, presented by Twin Peaks Restaurants. Take your tailgate to Twin Peaks, home of 29-degree drafts and wall-to-wall sports.
You're treading on that territory.
I'm treading on this territory. I disagree with the Mike Vrabel thing that you don't have to produce to lead. I think you have to produce to lead, and he's not producing. So to have Tavondre Sweat following Jeff Simmons like a puppy and saying this is the best defensive tackle in the league, I can't do better than to learn from him, when he ranks 110th in pass rushing at PFF, is sending the wrong message. You're saying follow that guy and do what he does, and he's not doing anything.
That was Paul Kaharsky yesterday morning on with Robbie and Rex Road, talking Jeffrey Simmons, D-May Spingen, and Donick here. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, discussing Jeffrey Simmons. I like the 8 o'clock hour on Wednesdays with Robbie and Rex Road. I always feel like I learned something when I listen to the three of them talk football. It's always good for a laugh. At one point, Joe, I think, got a text on the text line that said it was a question for Paul. And the question was, you have to choose one. Either Jared Stillman becomes the general manager of the Tennessee Titans, or you can no longer mention ever again that you went to Columbia University. And I think he had a hard time answering that question, but there was some laughter. And my son in the back seat started laughing. I don't know if he understood what was going on, but he heard the laughter. So Arlo is also a big fan of that 8 o'clock hour on Wednesdays with Paul. But that particular clip about Jeffrey Simmons and Paul saying, I think you have to produce to lead. Jeffrey Simmons is one of the highest paid players at his position per season. Chris Jones is ahead of him. Christian Wilkins is ahead of him. Nnamdi Madubuike is ahead of him. Quinnen Williams and Derek Brown. His annual average value, I'm sorry, that's the total value as well, but total value. Those are the five defensive tackles who make more money per season than Jeffrey Simmons. So there is an expectation that Jeffrey Simmons should be playing up to that level. And through three games, that has not happened. I also think that the performance of the Titans' defensive line, albeit against a lesser-than version of the Miami Dolphins, specifically the performance of Tavondre Sweat, that was red meat for the anti-Jeff Simmons crowd, because as we discussed the other day, what's the one argument a lot of people make in support of Jeffrey Simmons and his lack of counting stats, tackles, sacks, pressures, etc.? He impacts the games in ways that are not quantified on a stat sheet. Well, the Titans looked okay, again, against a compromised version of the Miami Dolphins without Jeffrey Simmons. So what do you think of this idea, Derek, that Paul has shared, that you have to produce to be considered a leader on a football team or in any sport, but in this case, a football team?
I mean, I can go with that theory if Jeffrey had never produced at all. If this was like his first year or second year and the Titans are asking him to be the leader and they're telling, you know, Tavondre Sweat to follow a first or second year guy that hasn't really, you know, staked his claim in the NFL, I can understand that if indeed that was the case. So in regards to what Paul said, like if it was 2 years in, he hadn't produced, or 3 years in, he hadn't produced, and you're asking, then okay, yeah, you're right. You got to produce in order to be a leader. But Jeffrey has produced. Jeffrey has produced. He's been arguably the best player on their defense for the last 3 years, not counting this year. But he's been the best player.
And you could go back further than that.
And we've been saying this. We've been, like 2 years ago, a year ago, we've been saying Jeffrey Simmons is the best player on this defense. So how can he go from being the best player on this defense to saying he's not a leader? Now, if you want to question the leadership about some of the other things that he's done, okay, we can have that conversation. But if you're talking about strictly play, he's produced. It's just we're four games in. I'm like everybody else. I want to see Jeffrey produce even more than what he has. When they pay you that type of money, it's almost there's no built-in excuses for you because they paid you that money because of what you've shown them and what they predict you can do in the future. So if you want to have the conversation about some things that he's done, like going at reporters, talk show hosts, stuff like that, let's have that, or fighting, let's have that discussion. But we can't have the discussion about him producing and or him being a leader or him not being a leader because he hasn't produced. Jeffrey Simmons has produced. He's produced in his league. That's why they paid him the money. Just because he's having a off season this year at the start of the season doesn't mean that he's still not a lead. You can't look to him as far as a leader because he hasn't produced this year or in the last four games. This dude has produced the last 3 years prior to this. He's earned that right if you want to base it upon production. He's earned that right to be a leader. But if you want to have the conversation outside of that, we can. But don't look at four games and say, well, you can't lead because you hadn't produced. If that's the case, they don't have no leaders really on that team. Because what if that's the case, the leader is Pollard. Pollard is the leader, and Harold Landry is the leader, and Sneed. Those are your three leaders. Now, there may be more. You could throw Hop in there. There are four leaders. If you want to base it upon your production, that's not a lot because their production really isn't that high.
You said it well, D-Base. I agree with everything you said. And this is the problem that I have with Paul on occasion, who I think works very hard. If there's one thing that I disagree, it oftentimes I think Paul overthinks a situation. I think he's overanalyzing this. You don't assess after each week who's productive and then who's the leader because of it. Let's take Paul's favorite team, the New York Yankees. If you were to assess Aaron Judge's leadership after the first month of the season, then by his definition, he couldn't be the leader of the Yankees because he had a horrendous first month. Now, fast forward, here we are in October, he will be the unanimous MVP of the league. Had an incredible season. They didn't in New York say, well, Aaron Judge, who has produced for years,
yes,
coming in, well, he's had a bad few weeks, he can't be the leader because he hasn't produced. That's dumb. That's overthinking and overanalyzing the situation. Paul Carson's been covering the Titans for a long time. He has seen the production of Jeffrey Simmons. He understands that when you build the skins on the wall and you produce, you have the ability to lead. Now, I do agree in principle that with rare exceptions, the guys who produce on the field over the long period of time are going to be your leaders. It's hard to have the kicker be the leader or the punter or the holder or the long snapper, right? It's just the leaders have to be driving the bus. That we all agree on. And we also all agree that Jeffrey Simmons has struggled in the first three games. But that's overthinking it to say he has to produce to be the leader. I do not subscribe to that at all.
I guess the worst case scenario, for lack of a better phrase, for Jeffrey Simmons is he does need to continue to produce because a player can only live on his reputation for so long.
Right, but it's more than three games.
I would agree with that. But if he continues to play, and now at this point, we have to keep the elbow injury as part of this conversation. If Jeffrey Simmons plays but struggles with this elbow injury, it's going to be, well, yeah, he isn't pressuring the quarterback, but his arm is hurt, his elbow is hurt. But I think the where Jeffrey Simmons might have to tread lightly, again, for lack of a better phrase, is, you know, your reputation can only take you so far. And if this season, if this full season goes by and Jeffrey Simmons is half the man he has been statistically, it's going to be harder to make the argument that we're making.
I'm not worried about the leader part. I am fully focused, if I'm the Titans, on let's get Jeffrey Simmons playing the way Jeffrey Simmons is capable of playing. That is what it's all about, and not about the other stuff will take care of itself.
Now, again, if you want to have the argument of should Jeffrey be a leader, based upon some things that he's done, that you figure if you're a leader, you can't do those things. Yes, we can have that conversation, because I think you're more likely to win your argument based upon that than based upon his production, because he has produced. He's produced so much that they gave him that big contract. When you're not producing, they're not giving you the contract that you have.
Right.
So he has produced. And again, if you want to base it upon what Paul is saying, there's a lot of guys in this league that are considered leaders of their team but not having a good season. So the leadership is going to fluctuate based upon your production, especially if you have been productive in this league. It doesn't work that way, Paul. They don't look at – once you've built up those skins on a wall, it's going to take a lot for a head coach to tear those down and you become not a leader of a football team. It's going to take a lot. Jeffrey's built up enough that just because he's not playing the way we believe he should be playing, that doesn't mean that he's not one of their leaders. He's not one of the guys that they're looking toward. Again, if you want to have this conversation about things that he's done outside of, the grass, then we can have that discussion. You're more likely to win it based upon that. But as far as the production and him not being a leader, teams don't do that. That's not how they operate, because there's a lot of guys out there that got high production, but you don't want them to be your leader.
That is true. And by the way, I said red meat for the anti-Jeffrey Simmons crowd. Maybe it was meatloaf. Maybe.
That's a good one.
Yeah. I'm waiting to see if Nick has the meatloaf clip.
I have it on my roll here. Give me
okay. If we don't get to it now, we'll get to it soon. And Tom in Nashville says the top leader based on productions for the Titans would be Nick Falk.
Got a point there. Got a point there.
Okay.
Well,
let's all talk to Nick Falk about all the issues. Oh, come on, man. Yeah.
But based upon what he said, he is right.
Well, Chris Sanders, I see, is on the line, which means it is time for Silly Underdog Picks. Coming up next, Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.